On Earth today, it's Thanksgiving. If the crew has to eat synthetic meatloaf, I want it to look like turkey. Charlie?
Captain Kirk from ship's galley.
Kirk here.
Sir, I put meatloaf in the ovens. There's turkeys in there now. Real turkeys.
Chief, have you...
That tickle!
Good evening, brothers and sisters, and welcome to another edition of Homebrew Talk, your monthly internet radio program that unlocks the mysteries of Zymergy and spreads the homebrew gospel one carboy at a time. Homebrew Talk is brought to you by the good people of Grow Radio, Gainesville's own community-supported, volunteer-driven, non-corporate, non-profit, one-of-a-kind radio station. Check out the latest sounds and the many fine programs that you'll find at growradio.org. Homebrew Talk is also brought to you by your Hogtown Brewers, a merry bunch of homebrew enthusiasts with a beer problem, even when I write it down. We gather once a month to share recipes, share techniques, and most importantly, to share homebrew. Find us on the interweb at hogtownbrewers.org. My name is John, and with me as always is my homebrew jockey partner, Ron. Ron and I are both longtime homebrewers, moderately proud members of the Hogtown Brewers, and Ron is a BJCP certified homebrew judge. Hello, Ron.
Hello, John. things written down, right?
Yeah. We have things written down, and we're sharing the mic tonight, you know, and the reason we're doing it, it's kind of a blustery, kind of chilly November evening here in Gainesville, but the studio tonight is pleasantly crowded, which I'm kind of happy about. Ron, tell our listeners what they can expect.
Well, what we're doing is we're continuing our November show tradition of homemade beer, homemade music, with live music in the studio. Now, you know, frankly, you know, this is a November tradition as cherished as the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. And this all started November 2010 when we did Homemade Beer and Music, the original. And then the next year we followed up with a sequel that was Homemade Beer, Homemade Music, number two, The Wrath of Ron and John. Next year, number three, Homemade Beer, Homemade Music, three, The Search for Homebrew. And now, well, here we are again. So this makes it year number four, Homemade Beer, Homemade Music, four, The Voyage Home for Homebrew. We're going to nerd it up all over the place here. Now, John, as you may recall, typically on our show, we talk a little bit about homebrew, properties of homebrew, and then in between our segments, we do some pre-recorded music, but today we're doing live music in the studio, and that means we're bringing in some more good friends, musicians, and today is the return of Hogtown's own brother, George Gomez, and his acoustic guitar. Hello, George.
Hey, guys.
Or how you like to be called, the what?
The G-Man.
The G-Man.
Great to have the G-Man back in the studio.
All right.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Absolutely. And we're going to be talking a little bit more with George later on, because he's not only playing some songs in the studio, but he does some gigs in around town, Gainesville and Ocala.
Yep.
He's a local favorite here. Now, some of the topics we're going to be doing today is all about making hard cider, techniques for hard cider, properties of hard cider, and giving helpful lessons on avoiding rookie homebrewer mistakes. And I think that works well with the topic of cider, because cider is a fairly easy thing to make, and it's a good first batch for homebrew, you know, rookie Zymergist. Right?
Sure enough, and pairs well with the holiday season coming up.
Now, before we begin, though, there wasn't something quite right with your introduction, and I'm not talking about the words you're skipping over. Now, you do the introductions, and I usually just sit back, but I've heard them so many times, I memorize them myself. Mm-hmm. You know, me and you, longtime members of Hogtown Brewers, longtime homebrewers, and... But then something was wrong after that, something this month. Mm-hmm. And, you know, normally you say, you know, and Ron is a BJCP certified judge, but that's not the complete story now, is it?
That is true. I have joined the ranks of my brothers and sisters with the in the BJCP, and I also now am a certified homebrew judge.
That's right. You finally took the plunge, took the test, and because the BJCP test is so hard to schedule around here, it only gets scheduled maybe every 2 years in this town. And 2 years ago, you were going to do it, but then life got in the way. But finally, you're able to take the test, and because we now know that you're certified, obviously that means you got your results, and that was just very recent. Mm-hmm. So congratulations on that.
No, thank you.
Now, it may surprise you to know that the BJCP, for quality control purposes, does record BJCP exam sessions. And I happen to have procured an actual recording of the exam you took last July. So let's take a listen, and I just want people to hear how grueling the test really is.
The defect in that one is bleach.
That's correct.
Yes. This tastes like the cow got into an onion patch.
Correct.
Yes.
Man, you nailed it. I'm going to assume that because you figured out the cow was in an onion patch, you must have been, testing a milk stout.
Either that or he was, using a lot of Pilsner malt and just didn't boil it long enough.
I hate it when that happens. Well, welcome to the club. Welcome to the league. So it's time for us to head to the Hall of Homebrew. Sweet. Going to talk about cider. Now, one of the things that the Hogtown Brewers is great about is that we have all these kind of different events that we've come up on our own. And one of those is Cider Day. And Cider Day, it's just like Me Day. It's just like Big Brew. Those events are where members bring their own equipment and brew either a recipe of their own or something that we came up with. And Cider Day is something we came up with because the HA doesn't have anything like that. So we decided last year to start one, and now we're doing it again. And besides, it's November. It's the season of ciders. And so we're going to talk about making them. Now, one could argue, well, maybe you should have started back in September so that it's ready by now or a little earlier. Granted, but still make them right now. They don't take that long.
Right.
You can still enjoy them while the weather's pretty cold, frigid, depending on where you're listening to this podcast, right? So apple cider, it's obviously way less complicated than beer. What's in it? Well, basically just apple juice. Yeah. No water needed. Don't need to water that down. Just apple juice and yeast. Now, of course, there's other things you can put in it, but unlike beer, where there is really an intense permutation of things, hops and malt, apple cider is pretty straightforward. It's just a matter of where you're getting your apple juice from. Now, the other type of cider, hard cider, is of course Perry's, which is made with pear juice, which is a terrific, lovely beverage, but that will be a show all its own. Now, the type of juice to get, if you're anything like us down in Florida, there's not a lot of apple trees around here. So we have to go to the store. And so, I might go to Sam's Club or Costco. You could go to your local grocery store like a Publix. That's probably a little more costly because you're going to want to buy 5 gallons of this. And you need to get the kind of apple juice that obviously tastes good, but also does not have any preservatives. And you can tell because it will have the word sorbate in the list of ingredients. Look for that. If it has it, that's not what you want. And I will say that there was not to steal any thunder, but that is a rookie mistake on cider because I do happen to have a friend a couple years ago who should have known better, and he got some juice with a sorbate in it, wondered why it wasn't fermenting. Because obviously the preservatives in the juice, it's not going to let your yeast do its thing. In fact, might even kill it. Now, the type of yeast that you want to use, you got various options, not all of them the best options. And luck would have it, total coincidence, in the recent issue of Zymergy, this is November 2013, recent issue of Zymergy, there was an article of yeast experiments for cider. It seemed like a sign that, sure, we're going to do this show. And he was using various yeast such as actual cider yeast that White Labs provides. He used a version of English ale yeast. I recall some Belgian yeast. If only I brought the actual article. But there was about seven of them that he did. And I personally never actually used cider yeast before. Most yeast that you use on ciders, much like meads, just dries the hell out of your right. ciders, and you're going to get an alcoholic bomb right there, or alcoholic popsicle. And so it's best to try and use a yeast that is not that does not as attenuate as like champagne yeast or wine yeast. That, right. I think that was another one.
Back sweetening is always a strategy when that happens, but if you can avoid that and does and have something that doesn't dry it out quite as much, it's easier and more enjoyable.
Yep. So to cut to the chase of what the results was of that article, basically the English ale yeast was the one that was preferred. He did this by having a bunch of ciders brewed as equal as possible except for the yeast, and then did a blind tasting with people who made the cider and judges who didn't make the cider, and then just the general public. So the consensus was the English ale yeast seemed to have the better taste. The cider yeast, I think, came in fourth, maybe. It was somewhere in the middle, somewhere surprising. If you want the complete article, get a copy of Zymergy magazine, especially if you're an AHA member, then you should already have it in your living room right now. Go read. Now, the amount of time that cider takes to get ready, well, I don't know what you've heard. You probably heard it takes 6 months at least before it's ready, just like you've probably heard meads don't even start drinking it till a year. And there is, of course, some truth to that. But really, that just means it just gets better with time. But that doesn't mean that is the minimum amount of time you have to wait till you can drink it. Now, certainly with cider, it can certainly be ready and enjoyable in a month and a half with no problem. But yes, it'll get better as time goes on. But there's no problem, no crime in doing some tastings while you're fermenting and after you've kegged it, assuming you do keg, to start doing some taste. Now, as mentioned, there is a fairly good chance that the yeast will dry out your cider. And when that happens, and it's to a degree that's just too much, you may be deciding, well, I got to go back sweeten. What that means is you're going to back sweeten with something sweet that you don't want fermented, so that it won't taste like a dry alcoholic bomb. And you'll need to do that by killing the yeast first after you're done as far as fermenting as you want to go. You'll kill the yeast. Once again, for the 27th time, we describe here on Homebrew Talk that you'll be using Camden tablets or potassium sorbate, though potassium sorbate does tend to work better when coupled with Camden tablets. And if you have about a 5-gallon batch, you'll probably use it, you could use a few tablets of sorbate, a few tablets of Camden, or if you just do Camden, which I tend to just do, I tend to do about 7 tablets. Now, like mead, there's all kinds of ways to flavor your cider. You can use fruit. You can do spices. Add in some honey. All the kind of things that you can do with the mead, you can certainly do with the cider. And in about a minute, I'm going to go over, well, not a minute, in a few seconds, I'm going to go over a recipe that describes a really good way to do that. And the recipe I have, I call it my winter warmer cider. It's one of those those recipes. It's money in the bank. It always comes out good, and it is a multi-bling winner.
Oh, okay.
In fact, it's one, I don't know, it's been put in competitions about 4 times over a 2-year period. It garnered at least 3 golds out of it and a couple second best of shows. And it's just a nice tasty cider. And depending on the kind of juice you get, it's kind of a big cider. Like most ciders might be 6%. This one's more to 9 to 10%. So definitely a winter warmer. Now, I'm going to go ahead and describe the recipe for you, but this recipe is already posted on the Homebrew Talk Facebook page. So once again, you note takers, relax.
Have a homebrew.
Have a homebrew. Especially, well, not if you're driving and listening to this podcast. Focus on the road. You're going to take 5 gallons of apple cider. Once again, no preservatives. The original recipe actually used Mott's apple cider, which you get in the store. That worked good. But if you can get something a little bit more natural, that's better. And for those who live in a more northern part of the country, you have way more options than we do getting some fresh apple juice. So obviously use that as fresh as you can. 2 tablespoons cinnamon, 1/2 tablespoon clove, 1 tablespoon allspice, 1 tablespoon nutmeg, 1 tablespoon orange peel. I'm not farting around here, man. 2 cups cane sugar, 2 cups brown sugar, 2 cups honey. And then on top of that, 1/2 teaspoon of acid blend. Acid blend obviously gives it a little acidity. Acid blend has about 3 different types of acids in it. Gives it a little bit of life. Now, you're going to take about 1 liter of the apple cider or apple juice, and you're going to bring it up to a medium heat. Once you get it there, getting it kind of hot, reduce the heat, add the cane and brown sugar and the honey and stir it until it's dissolved. Then you can add all the other spices and orange peel, everyone in the pool, and keep it heated for several minutes. While that's happening, pour the rest of the juice or cider into a sanitized carboy. Then after it's done heating, at least 5 minutes, pasteurize all that and letting all the flavors marry together, pour it into the carboy. Even though that 1 liter is hot, the rest of the cider is at least room temperature. That's not going to be a problem with as soon as you pour it in. It's going to cool down instantly. Then stir it with a paddle, or if you got a drill with a wind degasser, go nuts. Get it all stirred up. Then take some English ale yeast, hydrate the yeast, aerate your cider, and pitch.
So do you use Safaello 4, or what sort of yeast do you use?
You could use, I believe, the WLP-02. I personally have used 04, and I believe it was the 02, or I can't remember which one was in that article of which one had the best flavor, but yes.
Okay.
I think your favorite English ale will do just fine. Now, after fermentation, if it's too dry and alcoholic, you add those Camden tablets then, and then the next day, not the same day, the next day, you would add in melted frozen apple juice concentrate to taste. And then just let it sit and age.
So just real quick, how long is that fermentation process? When do you do your first sample?
Depending on the gravity, you know, it can be done in 3 weeks. If it's a bigger one, it's going to be done, you know, probably 4 or 5 weeks, give or take. And that's actually probably won't even take that long if you pitch enough yeast, quite frankly. But I start tasting certainly by the 4th week.
Okay. All right. Cool.
All right. So, hey, did you just start homebrewing recently? Well, up next, we're going to go over some common rookie mistakes after this live in the studio brew tune break on Homebrew
go
Talk.
Apple. Go orange. Go banana.
Homebrew Talk.
I would love to tour the Southland.
They tell me he was lonely, he's lonely still.
platform. The man gave me the news. He said, "You must be joking, son. Where did you get those shoes? Where did you get those shoes?" Well, I've seen them on the TV, movie show. They say the times are changing, but I just don't know. These things are gone forever, over a long time ago. Oh, yeah.
Discount rack like another can of beans.
All right, from the G-Man. You know, George, I don't think things go better than beer and pretzels. little deep cut there from some Steely Dan. I like that one a lot.
Thank you.
And then you're showing off your range a little bit there on the Entertainer. That sounded great.
Yeah, some old Billy Joel. I think everybody likes Billy.
Very nice.
I can't take this much longer. I gotta have a beer.
You know, Ron, I think we could probably do a show with just Barney sound effects.
Probably.
that would probably work out.
He's full of them.
He was indeed. You know, the holiday season is upon us, and my guess is some of our lucky listeners may be getting a starter kit under the tree this year. Maybe. You know, and didn't you get started with the gift of Mr. Beer?
Don't diss Mr. Beer. a lot of batches on it. I didn't know better.
The vessel that launched 1,000 homebrewers. So here at Homebrew Talk, we've been known to geek out on some esoteric homebrew topics. After all, this is beer science, damn it. But this month, I'm going to focus on beginners and perhaps some folks who want to kick their homebrewing up a notch. We're going to talk about how to avoid some common rookie mistakes that will allow you to enjoy our favorite hobby even more and, of course, brew better beer. So first off, I'm going to start off with a fatal flaw. Some brewers, even experienced homebrewers, don't bother with hydrometer readings. They have an attitude of, well, let's just see what happens.
Wrong, sir. Wrong.
Thank you, Willie. You're not going to be able to tell if you've had a proper fermentation if you didn't check your original and final gravity. And this can be helpful if you want to adjust the alcohol content of your beer by adding or subtracting fermentables. If you have a stuck fermentation, in other words, if your bubbling is stopped but your gravity is still high, you can strategize on how to wake up your yeast by either agitating the wort, pitching more yeast, or going to the old Homebrew Talk favorite, getting a little Beano in the mix. You can also experiment to see how the specific gravity changes when you mash at higher or lower temperatures. Hydrometers are really easy to use and one of the essential measurements all homebrewers should make. So get into that habit. Take that original gravity. Take that final gravity. You just got to do it. Another rookie mistake in proper temperature, along with your hydrometer, your thermometer, is the other essential gauge in your homebrew toolkit. Now, if you're an all-grain brewer, you'll want to measure the temperature of your mash, and it's best to do this with a thermometer with a long temperature probe, as the temperature can vary considerably within your mash tun. And you'll also want to monitor the temperature of your wort as you're chilling it. Now, I use an immersion chiller, and I try to get my wort down to at least 90 degrees or below as quickly as possible. Temperatures above that really encourage those microbes to grow. So you want to try to get it below 90 degrees and after that down to fermentation temp as soon as you can before pitching your yeast. So you'll also want to check the temperature of the wort that you're using to check your original gravity. Now, most hydrometers are standardized to 60 degrees Fahrenheit, and the density of liquid changes with temperature, so it's important to take your reading and then adjust for temperature using brewing software or a table that can easily be found online at hogtownbrewers.org. And once you get there, you know, look for the Brew School button, which has a lot of great resources. And while you're waiting for that wort to chill, why not scroll down to the podcast button and download your favorite episode of Homebrew Talk?
Shameless plug.
The plug for the show within the show. Shameless. Another temperature challenge that you'll concern yourself with is your fermentation temp. Now, most rookies are going to have, they're not going to have a chest freezer at their disposal. So to maintain constant fermentation temperature can be a challenge. So you want to look for a place in your house where the temperature is consistent. Most ales do okay fermenting between 68 and 70 degrees Fahrenheit. However, I generally like to ferment on the cooler end of the recommended temperature range. So if you don't have a chest freezer, placing the carboy in a shallow bucket of water and draping it with an old cotton shirt can do the trick. You'll need to have a fan blowing on the carboy, and the theory there is the T-shirt will wick the water up from the bucket, and then the fan will facilitate evaporation, keeping your wort cool and happy. So another rookie mistake, poor oxygen. So generally speaking, you want to keep your beer away from oxygen, but there is one exception, one very important exception, and that's prior to pitching your yeast, you want to aerate your wort. Now, the yeast need oxygen initially to build cell walls and prepare for reproduction, and so there's a number of ways you can do that. You can simply aerate the wort by agitating your carboy. However, there is an important safety concern with that. Full carboys are very heavy, so take precautions if you choose to get jiggy with it. You can use a wine degasser, which allows you to bring in power tools, which is always a cool thing. Or you can go big time and get yourself an oxygen tank with an aeration stone. Another important consideration when you're doing aeration, you don't want to aerate your wort until it reaches 80 degrees. Oxygen can chemically bind to wort compounds at hot or even warm temperatures, and then as time elapses, those binds break and they release oxygen back into the wort, which can cause stale off flavors. So want to avoid that. You know, we've said many times on the show that brewing is about two-thirds cleaning and about one-third brewing. So a rookie mistake can be poor sanitation. Bacteria just love wort, so don't let them rain on your homebrew parade. Be sure that you're thoroughly cleaning your equipment after each use, and be sure that your equipment is clean, meaning free of gross debris, before you sanitize it. Because if you use a sanitizer on something that's grungy, it's not going to be sanitized. So everything that touches the beer needs to be sanitized, and proper sanitation is a topic of a whole other show. In fact, it was last month's show, so you can check that out at homebrewjockey.com, shameless plug number two. Another common rookie mistake is delaying your cleaning process until the next day. This is a bad idea. All items that come in contact with beer or wort should be at least be rinsed as soon as possible. And so I like to have a 5-gallon bucket just simply filled with water on brew day, and as I finish with certain items, I start soaking them, and it makes cleanup a lot easier. You don't want that stuff to get dry and caked on. It's going to take you a lot more effort to get it clean and ready for your next brew day. So speaking of water, many rookies brew with water straight from the tap. Now, this is not always a good idea. It's generally best for beginners to steer clear from advanced water chemistry topics. And generally speaking, I'd say if the tap water tastes good, it's usually okay for brewing. Mucking with your water can sometimes lead to more problems than it's worth. However, at minimum, you should use water that is chlorine-free. So you can buy bottled water, filtered, or use a charcoal filter, and those are good ways of avoiding being a homebrew noob. Another issue, poor storage of yeast and hops. These ingredients, of course, need a little TLC as they wait to become magical libations. You might need to remember that the yeast should always be refrigerated, but not frozen, and this goes for your dry yeast too. Hops should be stored in the freezer and ideally in an oxygen-free container. And if you store them properly, particularly if it's in a vacuum pack, hops can last months, even up to a year. Speaking of hops, not accounting for the alpha acid difference in your recipe. Each lot of hops is going to have a unique alpha acid level that you should find out when you buy them. If the alpha acid percentage of your hops is higher than those listed in the recipe, you can add less hops to achieve the same level of bitterness. Conversely, if your alpha acid is lower, more hops will be needed. So not paying attention to alpha acid percentage can give you very different results. Hey guys, come on in. Got some visitors in the studio here. All right. Other things. Not rehydrating your yeast. So get your dry yeast off to a good start. Host a pool party before sending them into battle. Although you can sprinkle dry yeast directly into the wort, it's best to follow the manufacturer's instructions and rehydrate the yeast in a sterilized container using filtered water before pitching. Another thing you run into, not leaving enough headspace in the carboy. Most homebrew recipes are 5-gallon batches. Therefore, you always want to use at least a 6-gallon or even a 6.5-gallon carboy to allow for sufficient headspace during active carbonation. Not leaving enough headspace can lead to a mess at best and might even allow for yeast to escape from your carboy during fermentation and then slide back in after becoming contaminated. I think that that's been a problem for me in a couple of batches that that went south. Certainly you don't want to mix your kitchen utensils with your brewing stuff. You get yourself a dedicated set of measuring spoons, scales, things to stir the contents of your kettle. This is going to keep you in the habit of keeping them clean, and they'll be easy to find when you need them on brew day. Another thing, no notes. Two hallmarks of good brewers are the ability to repeat a good recipe and the ability to figure out what went wrong if you brew something that you're less than proud of. Now, you can't do either without good notes, so keeping a brewing notebook or maintaining a spreadsheet is essential. You'll need a detailed list of your ingredients, including malt, hops, with percentage of alpha acids, and yeast. Any spices or other adjuncts need to be noted. You'll also need to note if you treated your water by adding any phosphoric acid or brewing salts.
You got to have notes on the process too. How long did you do the boil? At what point did you put in your hop additions? How did you chill your wort? How long did it take? Did you aerate the wort? What was your method of aeration? Original and final gravities, temperature of the wort when you pitched the yeast. How long did it take to begin fermentation? Lots of these things you need to take down. How did you go about carbonation? Did you bottle condition? Are you kegging it? If you're kegging, how many volumes of CO2 were used? So there's lots of reasons for beer to develop off flavors, and if you need to do a little beer CSI, detailed notes can help you track down the problem and correct it. Now, there's lots of ways to keep records. A quick search of homebrew spreadsheet on Google will give you lots of electronic options, but a good old notebook works just fine as well. Speaking of spreadsheets, brewing software many rookies don't use, but there are a number of free and commercial programs available to homebrewers. If you want to just stick your toe in the water, download a free version of a program like QBrew. I do all of my record keeping electronically using ProMash. It's pretty easy to use once you get the hang of it. There are lots of options out there for software and even mobile apps, but Ron, that's a topic for a whole nother show.
I believe it is.
Finally, not really a rookie mistake, but I think a lot of rookies are timid about entering and participating in homebrew competitions. Get involved with your local homebrew club and beer competitions. Bringing home the bling is always nice, but the real reason to participate is to get expert, objective feedback on your libation creation. Take a chance. Bottle up some brew. Put your beer in competition. It'll make you a better brewer. It's a great way to learn about beer styles is to volunteer at these competitions as a steward. And stewards pour beer for judges, offer assistance with scoring sheets, but they also get to sample the entries along with the judges. And there's almost always first-time stewards at competitions, and most judges are really good to work with. So it's going to give you a whole nother level of appreciation for beer. And if you really like the competition, study for the BJCP exam. Believe me, brothers and sisters, if I can do it, you can do it too. There's nothing like being a certified beer geek. So a number of considerations to avoid for rookie mistakes. Up next, we're going to learn about how to fundraise for your homebrew club. But right now, it's time for another live tune break. You're listening to Homebrew Talk on Grow Radio.
Wrong!
Wrong?
Wrong!
Right?
Wrong!
Homebrew Talk.
All right, George, sounding great. Get a little double shot of Eagles there. Sounded really good. Hey, George, you got any shows coming up anytime soon here?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. In fact, this Friday I'll be playing at Wahoo's Seafood Restaurant.
Okay.
If you guys haven't heard of Wahoo's, it's an excellent seafood restaurant located at 39th Ave and I-75. It's real easy to find. And I'll be starting at 7 o'clock. It gets really busy on Friday nights, guys. So if you want to head out there and you want to get a good seat to hear some music, I recommend you get there a little earlier and
cool. Be
prepared to have some wonderful food and hear some great music.
Awesome. Sounds good. And I hear there's rumors about a future project with a full four-piece band.
Yeah, we're working on it right now. We've been in the studio a few rehearsals now, and pretty soon we'll be bringing in the drummer, and we'll be tightening up the group, and we'll be playing at some of the more local venues here in
awesome.
Gainesville. So stay tuned for further news on that.
Cool. Very good.
Gainesville just won't know what hit them. You know, I'm going to talk about a topic that everyone likes and pays attention to, and that's money. Now, when you got a homebrew club, and there's plenty of them out there, not only in Florida, but all over the place, certainly within hearing range of this podcast, and the normal way that a lot of clubs get their money is, you know, basically from membership dues, and if they're fortunate enough to be able to hold a competition and able to have a not let the cost of that competition get out of hand, they can make some money off that. Those are the normal ways, but they, you know, they don't get your club too much to work with. I guess unless you have a 200 member club and above, then the dues help out. But there's some ideas that other clubs have come up with that have gotten them some very respectable amounts of funds to go do all kinds of activities that you really wish you could do. And some examples are out there in Cocoa Beach, the Saws Club. They do a beer run that has netted them quite a good bit of funds, and they've also been able to parlay that into, I do believe, into some donations to charity. So it's a win-win for everyone. back down South Florida, I believe the Draftsmen do an Oktoberfest picnic type dinner where they charge for an amazing meal. There's plenty of brews on tap, and those things are things I think every club could do, something like that. Now, as far as Hogtown, we do something, I'm not saying, I guess, more intense, but it's a little bit more involved in that we do, we sell beer at the Medieval Fair, and we have a craft beer fest. And the reason why I say these are a little bit more intense is because they require a liquor license. And if you're a homebrew club, these are things you are capable of doing if you take care of a few things first, and that is, as a homebrew club, because if you want to get an alcohol license, there, at least in the state of Florida, and I assume in many other states, what I'm about to describe is similar, that you can be a non-profit club, and you can be allowed to get an alcohol license. And as a homebrew club, you would be a 501c7, and that is a recreational non-profit group. You, of course, would have to incorporate with your state, or you know, register your club as a corporation. So to get an alcohol license, I'm going to talk specifically about Florida, but it's probably going to have a lot of similarities to other states and wherever else you're listening, is in Florida, a nonprofit can get up to 3 special liquor licenses a year, and those special licenses are a 3-day license. And that allows you to, in our example, sell beer at a Medieval Fair or hold a craft beer festival. Now, when you get one of these licenses, there are some hoops to jump through. You have to get sign off at the state of Florida. You have to get a zoning sign off, which means your city or county has to sign off wherever you're holding the event. And you have to include a diagram of the area where beer will be consumed. And, of course, your club officers must sign off. And the last thing, which may or may not apply to you, is something called attestation. And that means that if you're holding an event where at that address there's already an organization that has a liquor license, they have to sign off that they won't be using their license at the same time you do, because ABT, which is alcohol, beverage, and tobacco, they have rules against more than one organization with a license using it on the same day at the same address. And that has tripped up rookie mistakes for organizations, because that tripped up a beer run, not from us, but a beer run that was held a few years ago in Gainesville, and ABT shut them down because they discovered that they had a license, but someone else also had a license on that same address, and they did not get a sign-off of attestation. So know your rules.
Yeah, yeah. My wife my wife ran in that beer run, actually, and was a little bit distraught that there was no beer at the end of it. So Thanksgiving's right around the corner. What sort of craft beer are you serving up with the bird? This is What's Brewing. All right, you know, turkey goes with many beer styles, and while turkey typically doesn't offer as strong flavors as steak or roast beef, Thanksgiving turkey is often kicked up a bit with spices, citrus, frying, or even smoking, as some people are known to do. That's you, Ron. Therefore, it can handle a wide variety of beer styles. If you're doing a traditional roasted turkey, it'll pair nicely with a Marzen, Vienna Lager, or a Dunkelweizen. If you roast the bird and stuff it with citrus, like my mother-in-law does, try an Abbey Triple or a strong Golden Ale. Interesting side effect, the Abbey Triple and Strong Golden Ale help you deal with the mother-in-law as well.
Win-win.
Just kidding, Nancy. I love you very much, and you know that. Fried turkey goes well with a Maibach, and smoked turkey. Why not try a smoked wheat or other sort of Rausch beer? A favorite side in my family is oyster stuffing, and this pairs perfectly with a dry Irish stout. Cranberry sauce goes nicely with a Belgian wit. Sweet potatoes, often prepared with winter spices, so why not try a Christmas ale or other winter warmer, spiced winter warmer? And finally, no turkey day is complete without a hearty dessert of pumpkin pie and a scoop of ice cream or whipped cream. And this is where you can break out the big guns with an imperial stout, barley wine, or Belgian quad. Now, these suggestions were taken from Dr. Bill Sizek's Thanksgiving pairings, and if you want more information and suggestions for your Thanksgiving dinner, visit the food pairing section at craftbeer.com. So, winding up towards the end of our show, if you're a Facebooker, like us on Facebook, and as we always say, support your local craft beer bars, support your local breweries, and of course, as a reminder, support local live music.
Boy, I'm sure glad that's over with. Me too! Yeah, but you know, I learned something today.
Yeah, you know, hard cider, it isn't hard to make. Doesn't take long either, so me thinks every homebrew Zymergist should give it a try at least once.
Well, you know, I learned that if you always check your gravity with your calibrated hydrometer and watch those alpha acid percentages, no one will accuse you of being a homebrew noob.
All right, that's it for the Turkey Day edition of Homebrew Talk. We'll be back next month. And you can check out past podcasts at homebrewjockey.com. But before we go, how about a little Tom Petty from the G-Man?
Never was around, but she grew up.
there's pigeons down on Market Square. She's standing in her underwear, looking down from the hotel room. Nightfall will be coming soon. Oh my.